on this episode of RevHang.
Wow, that's the darkest dark horse I've ever seen.
Ferrari can't mess up pit strategy if there's no pit stops. It's time for the Perez slander.
It's back, baby. Let's go, Perez slander time.
That's Pato for you. Likes the loose car and has the fast hands to keep it under control.
Wow, what a sentence.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of RevHang. I'm your host, Nathan Nevue, and alongside me, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Ben Bagley. How's it going, Ben?
Doing great. I've been having a pretty good weekend. It's been nice and sunny, and I got a new motorcycle.
Nice.
If you didn't care. It's a little KTM 390 Adventure. I love it. It's so rowdy. The previous owner put a slip on Yoshimura. And did a little bit of a cat delete and resonator delete. So it sounds just like a stroked out single cylinder dirt bike. It's awesome.
Awesome stuff, Ben. Well, this is definitely a motoring podcast of some sorts. Not necessarily a motorcycle podcast, though.
Another podcast that we could totally do.
Used to be in season one, a little bit more so. But
well, that's a throwback.
That is a throwback to the MotoGP days. Anyway, this is not full-on a motorcycle podcast. This is a racing podcast, so let's jump right into some racing news. With our padding news for this week, the only one we have is FOM launched personal attacks against Michael Andretti.
What? I did not see this.
You did not see this. This was down in the depths of Formula One news this week. One of the owners of Liberty Media and one of the big guys in the Formula One management team, was in a meeting with Mario Andretti, where they were talking business, and then out of nowhere, the FOM guy says, "I will do everything in my power to ensure that Andretti does not end up on the Formula One grid." Or he said, more specifically, he said, "I will do everything in my power to make sure that Michael doesn't end up on the Formula One grid." Mm. So, Michael Andretti being the head boss of Andretti Global, it has now gotten personal. And I don't think that's the way F1 should have taken this.
Perhaps not.
Yeah.
But what do we know?
Yeah. It might hold up in a court of law. Probably not, though.
Yeah, so, I haven't heard any news about the congressional stuff or any updates about that, but
I haven't either. But I don't anticipate things getting better in the future.
No, so
especially
excited
after
America
this.
Goes to war with the FIA, or not even the FIA. It's just Liberty Media,
an American company. Yeah,
yeah, wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah. They are in hot water right now. I would not be surprised if they lost a fair few assets in the coming months.
Yeah, that's mostly after Ticketmaster stuff.
Yeah, Ticketmaster and Live Nation and all of those things are Liberty Media properties. And so is Formula One. So this could get wrapped up in a whole bunch of other lawsuits. And it's going to be interesting to see how F1 pulls out of this. I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but if
the
there
domino
are...
effect that started with Taylor Swift fans not being able to get tickets and ends with Andretti entering the Formula One grid in 2026.
They need to make the most convoluted movie ever out of this.
I love that domino effect. That's awesome.
That's great. Yeah. All right, IndyCar, let's move on. Indy 500 was this week. This was the biggest week in racing for the year. We had the Indy 500 and the Monaco Grand Prix, of course. So, going into qualifying for the Indy 500, I will not be going through all 33 drivers. I will give you the top 10 for context, and spoiler alert, that's all that's going to matter. In first place was Scott McLaughlin, followed by Will Power and Joseph Newgarden on the front row. Then the next row was Rossi, Larson, and Ferrucci. And then the 7 through 10 were VK, O'Ward, Rosenqvist, and Sato.
Shit, I forgot. Thought it was still racing.
Yes, he's only doing the 500 this year, I believe.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah, I don't think he's doing ovals like the other ovals either. But, yeah, he's a two-time Indy 500 winner, so he's probably got a spot reserved on there for him as long as he would like one. But anyway, some notable qualifying positions. Colton Herta's in 13th. Scott Dixon's in 21st. Anybody else that really mattered? Not really. Alright, let's move into the race. McLaughlin was able to maintain control of the race early on, in the lead most of the time, or the net lead at least. There was a lap one incident involving Marcus Ericsson, Tom Blomqvist, and Pietro Fittipaldi. Blomqvist spun out in turn one, lap one, and took Ericsson with him, who then bounced off the wall and took Fittipaldi with both of them.
Brutal.
Yeah. Sad stuff. Ericsson was displeased, to say the least.
Yeah, the onboard has been punching his steering wheel a bunch.
Yeah, he was not a happy boy. The guy won 2 years ago, and then he came in second last year, so he was hoping for a good result, even after starting 32nd. Just barely made it through bump day, as did Graham Rahal for the second year in a row. Yeah, Ericsson was out early, possibly a contender for the race, but it was not to be.
Yep, that's a trend this race.
Yeah. Colton Herta made rapid progress to the field early on, moving his way up. The legend himself, Stingray Rob, led several laps of the race in the early stages. Hondas were dropping like flies during the first half of the race. It was every 30 seconds, it seemed like another Honda engine was blowing up.
We barely got to lap... I'm surprised we got to lap 100 with as many cars as we did at the rate that they were coming down.
There were a lot of cautions in the first 100 laps. On lap 86, Herta spun out and got out of his car, putting him 30 laps down. He should have stayed in his car and gone through pits. Probably could have been only a lap down.
Yeah.
Depending on how fast he got going, he might have even been able to stay on the lead lap, but that's unlikely.
Yeah. I wonder if he knew something that we just, like, there was something else wrong with this car, maybe. I don't know.
It's possible, but
it looks like he just hit the Mario Kart banana peel.
Yeah. He spun out, and his front wing hit the wall, and it looks like the only damage to the car was the front wing. It's hard to know, though, but they did get the car turned around really quick, so I think Colton might have just gotten emotional and messed up and got out of the car.
Which, to be fair, if I was in second place 100 laps in or so, I would also be pretty devastated.
Yeah, fair. Anyway, moving on, Ryan Hunter-Reay had a 360 spin moment on lap 107 with an amazing save. Scott Dixon got a little bit aggressive on his defense and sent Ryan Hunter-Reay spinning off the track. But with the incredible reflexes of a man with 20-plus years of experience, he was able to 360 out of it and keep the car
pretty cool.
Going the same direction, yeah. Kyle Larson had a fantastic race until he sped in the pit lane and got a drive-thru penalty, ending his hopes for a win. Other than that, it was very impressive what he was doing. Unfortunately, there was a 4-hour rain delay at the beginning of the race, which meant he was not able to go take part in the Coca-Cola 600. Let me look this up. Because I know he flew out there. Yeah, looks like he did not make it to the Coca-Cola 600. He was planning on doing the double duty with the biggest IndyCar race of the year and the biggest NASCAR, one of the biggest NASCAR races of the year, all on the same day.
That's ambitious, for sure.
Yeah, he would have been able to do it if it wasn't for a 4-hour thunderstorm delay at Indy. But that is what happened. Alex Rossi, Scott Dixon, and Pato O'Ward swapped the lead back and forth in the third quarter of the race, saving fuel and working together Willpower then crashed out later on in the race, and on the final lap, O'Ward took the lead, but was unable to keep it into turn three, where Newgarden was able to pass him and win the race. Yeah, Newgarden was always kind of right there, around fourth, fifth place, just waiting for his moment, and he jumped to the front at the end and was able to make it stick.
Yeah, that's the best strategy. I feel like we kind of see that every year, where it's not the one who's leading the entire race, it's the guy who's in second or third or fourth or fifth the entire race.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, let's go through the results of the race, and this time, unfortunately, I will go through all 33.
Oh, man.
Alright, so winning the race was Joseph Newgarden, followed by Pato O'Ward and Scott Dixon from 21st place. 4th and 5th were Rossi and Pillow. 6th through 10 were McLaughlin, Kirkwood, Ferrucci, VK, and Daly. 11 through 15 were Ilott, Rasmussen, Lundgaard, Sato, and Rahal. 16 through 20 were Robb, Carpenter, Larson, Grosjean, and Castro Neves. 21 through 25 were Simpson, Canapino, Herta, Power, and Andretti. Everybody below Power was a DNF except for Herta passed Power. So everyone passed Power as a DNF. So Power, Andretti, Hunter Ray, Rosenqvist, Lundqvist, Legg, Armstrong, Blomqvist, Fittipaldi, and Ericsson. There's so many Swedish names. So, yeah, lots of DNFs, but that's typical for Indy. There's so many cars. It's such a long race. Not too surprised there. But lots of hard racing. We did get some younger drivers pretty far up in the field. Callum Ilott in 11th. Kyle Kirkwood in 7th. Christian Lundgaard in 13th. Christian Rasmussen in 12th. Stingray Robb in 16th. Who was leading the race for a solid chunk of the time.
You almost made that money back.
I almost made that money back. I did put $5 on Stingray Robb to win the Indy 500. It had an over $1,000 return.
And, should have bet on Catherine Legg. That was like a plus 50,000 betting odds.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you wouldn't have gotten anything back, but.
Yeah, either way.
It would have been funny.
But Stingray Robb was giving me help. Maybe if safety cars or cautions came out at the right time, I could grab that $1,000 and run away.
Never bet again a day in your life.
Yeah, right. But no, it was not meant to be. I even messaged Stingray Robb and tried to pump him up before the race, but I doubt he saw it.
You didn't pay enough to pray?
Probably not. I think I also put money on, who else did I put money on? I put money on somebody else. Might have been Rossi. I don't remember. Anyway, I did not hit either, I don't believe, so.
Oh, well.
$10 poorer, but as it is. All right, so, talking points. Joseph Newgarden takes the first Indy 500 back-to-back win in 22 years. Since the early 2000s.
Who's the last one to do it?
I was hoping you weren't going to ask me that, Ben. But I think it was either AJ Foyt or Alonso or somebody. Indy 500 winners.
Your keyboard is quieter, so I have to ask you to look these things up.
Okay. Pause for dramatic effect. Last back-to-back win was actually Helio Castroneves. 2001-2002.
Huh.
Cool. Yep. So, it has been a while since we've had a back-to-back winner. Yeah, so cool stuff there. Pato O'Ward, though, was not very happy with the result. He had a great race. Drove fantastic the whole time. But once again, Indy decided it was not for him. And
he actually finished this time.
At least he did finish, yeah. He had some moments. He had quite the save one time. He caught the car twice in one corner. but that's Pato for you. Likes a loose car and has the fast hands to keep it under control.
Wow, what a sentence.
Thanks for that, Ben. All right. Alex Palou had a pretty sneaky race. He ended up finishing fifth. Kind of was back there most of the race. Didn't really make a lot of noise, but very good finish in terms of the championship, keeping himself firmly on top.
Yeah. And remember when IndyCar or the Indy 500 is double points?
I do very much.
Good times.
Yeah. Joseph Newgarden would be approaching the lead of the championship right now if that was still the case.
Yeah. Made up for not having a whole race under his belt.
Yeah. So speaking of the championship, Alex Palou is still in front, followed by Scott Dixon, only 20 points behind, which in IndyCar is nothing. And then Will Power right behind him. And then we got Pato O'Ward about 50 points behind Palou, along with Colton Herta. So still quite a few people in the hunt, depending on how the rest of the season goes. But yeah, it's not quite over yet.
Yeah, there's less than a 70-point difference between 1st and 10th.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah. It's early in the morning. Well, it's not that early in the morning, but
somewhat.
It's the morning, so math brain is not working yet.
It's the morning on a holiday, so it's fairly early, yeah.
Yeah, that's my excuse.
All right, that rounds off our talks on IndyCar. Let's move on to Formula One and the Monaco Grand Prix. For qualifying, we had Leclerc take pole position, followed by Piastri and Sainz. Fourth and fifth were Norris and Russell. Verstappen qualified sixth, followed by Hamilton, Tsunoda, Albon, and Gasly in the top ten. Notably, Sergio Perez started 16th. Both Haases were disqualified after being caught with illegal specs on their car.
I think it was their DRS flap was opening it too wide of an angle.
Something like that. So both Haases disqualified from qualifying. Aston Martin was down in 13th, 14th. Yeah, past that, it was a Monaco qualifying. It was a good one.
Yep.
All right, moving into the race. Leclerc maintained the lead on the start. Magnussen made contact with Perez, pulling himself, Perez, and Hulkenberg out of the race in a massive accident. Sainz and Piastri came together in the beginning, causing Sainz to pull off the road with a puncture. There was a red flag for the Magnussen-Perez incident, giving Sainz a break, putting him third on the restart, because not every car made it through the first sector. Before the red flag, Ocon hit Gasly, which ended Ocon's race with damage and caused massive drama in the Alpine garage. The race order stayed the same on the restart. Leclerc, Piastri, Sainz, and Norris pulled away from the field, opening up a massive 15-second gap. On lap 48, Ferrari was rude to Leclerc. On lap 51, Bottas overtook Sargeant, and that's all that happened that race.
Yep, not much. Pretty much after qualifying, what you see is what you get. Although, man, that crash was brutal. We'll talk about after results, I guess.
Yeah, Perez's car was in shambles. All right, results. Top three were Leclerc, Piastri, and Sainz. Fourth and fifth were Norris and Russell. Sixth was Verstappen. That is the same as the qualifying order, shocker. 7 through 10 were Hamilton, Tsunoda, Albon, and Gasly. I think also the same.
Was it? First points finish for Williams.
Yes. Yeah, so the top 10 in the race were the exact same as the top 10 in qualifying. Welcome to Monaco.
Awesome. So cool. Love that.
And then 11 through 15 were Alonso, Ricciardo, Bottas, Stroll, and Sargeant. And then 16th, rounding off the finishers, was Zhou Guanyu. And then we had four DNFs all on lap one, and it was Ocon, Perez, Hulkenberg, and Magnussen.
Yeah. Man, what is it about the race direction at Monaco where they miss all the big drama?
I don't know. They do it every year, though. It's not the normal F1 TV direction team. Monaco has their own special team. It's part of their contract that they get to use that team. And so hopefully it changes in the future. But
yeah, it was just showing Leclerc and Norris racing, and then all of a sudden red flag pops up on the banner on the left side of the screen. I'm like, what happened?
Oh, I thought it was for Sainz originally, because we saw Sainz pull off the road.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, and I was like, really, red flag? And then it cuts to Perez in a car without any car on it.
Yeah, it was just the crash structure. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, what?
Yeah, you have no indication of anything gone wrong, and then it cuts to the track where it's Perez's car is like, there's nothing left. There's debris everywhere. And you see other cars in the walls in the background. You're like, what happened?
Wish we'd seen it. That'd be super cool.
It took a long time for them to throw that red flag too, considering.
Yeah.
Because I mean, Leclerc and Piastri were already in the chicane after the tunnel by the time the red flag came out.
Yeah, Monaco's a short track. You gotta get on that stuff fast.
Yeah. But anyway, let's talk about the race. Magnussen, an absolute torpedo today. What are we thinking? Because he was not given any sort of penalty or anything for his contact with Perez. If he was, he would have a race ban.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. No penalty for Magnussen. If he was given a penalty, he would be banned for a race. I don't know if that had something to do with the decision to not give him a penalty. It shouldn't. That's for sure. And also, just with how Magnussen's been driving the last 3, 4, 5 weeks, like, it might be wise to have him sit out for a week. And he might still sit out for a week.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him, but he's kind of turning into Grosjean a little bit. He was teammates with Grosjean for a while. Long time.
Yeah.
But he's hitting everybody and everything, and it's kind of just
like a man who does not have a seat next year.
Oh yeah, no, he does not. He shouldn't. This goes into another thing. But I think the last 2 years have on my draft board cut Magnussen from Haas.
I think we both have.
Yeah. I don't know how he's stayed in the sport this long. I understand how he got in.
He the one who came back.
Well, Haas was in a tough situation, and they had to get somebody quickly. So I understand why they brought him back with Schumacher in 21, I think it was. Or 22, it might have
22,
been.
22, yeah.
It would have been 22, yeah. Yeah, it would have been 22. So I understand why they brought him back to pair Schumacher, but after getting Hülkenberg and then having a swath of great talent in Formula 2 that they could be picking up, I don't see how they've kept K-Mag for this long. Hülkenberg's been fantastic for them, but Magnussen not so much. So I anticipate 2 new drivers at Haas next season.
Yes, that worked out really well for them last year, or last time.
Yeah, well, last time. I don't anticipate 2 rookies at Haas, though.
Yeah, that's fair.
Probably 1 rookie, but anyway, let's talk about
speculation.
Sergio Perez.
Podcast.
Yeah, speculation. Oh boy. It's time for the Perez slander.
It's back, baby.
It's
let's
back.
Go.
It's
Perez slander time.
Been on a hiatus for a few weeks. Oh boy, qualifying. Okay, so for clarification, Haas did do qualifying. They just were disqualified afterwards. So during qualifying, while Perez did start the race 16th, he qualified 18th. Not good.
No, I mean, even after the Haas were disqualified, qualifying 16th is still not good.
Yeah, especially in Monaco where you can't really move up.
And he's supposed to, it's supposed to be Perez's, that's his thing. It's like the street circuit.
Yeah.
Tight course. That's where he really comes into it.
Yeah. So last year, Monaco, when he crashed out in Q1 and started last, that was the beginning of his downward spiral last year. And Will we see a repeat of another downward spiral for
Checo? Are we already in the repeat? Who knows?
It's possible. Yeah. All signs are pointing to Perez maintaining his seat for next season at the moment, which just absolutely shocks me to my foundation.
It's a very different Red Bull than what we're used to.
Yeah, I think Red Bull is in a place right now, though, to be fair to them, where I think they are trying to keep as much stability in the team as possible. Because that team has been rather unstable as of late.
Why? I don't even know what you're talking about.
So it's possible that they'll retain Perez just to not shake things up too much. Because who knows if Verstappen will even be there next year. I can't imagine that Verstappen's going to leave, but, you know, rumors are rumors.
Sim racing takes a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, he would go to Mercedes if anything, but I just don't see him ruining his career like that. All right. Leclerc broke his Monaco curse, finally, with a good result at his home race. Great result. He won it. That was a very heartwarming moment. The team radio after the race was awesome.
Yep. Yeah, it was awesome to see. Everybody was so excited.
Yeah. I think it's really cool that he goes 2 years without winning, and he just keeps getting pole positions and then coming up second or worse, and heartbreak after heartbreak for Leclerc. And then finally, the first race he wins again is Monaco. I think that's very cool.
Yep, and it wasn't because of some weird Verstappen DNF or anything like that. It was just pure pace and qualifying.
All him, yep.
Yep.
Yeah, so with that being said, the championship is heating up a little bit. Leclerc is only 30 points behind Verstappen, 31 points. Which is still a ways, but it's closer. And with the trend of how things have been going, Verstappen can't just check out and relax.
Yeah, not like last year.
No, one DNF and all of a sudden this championship is wide open. Lando Norris is about 56 points behind Verstappen, so he's a little further back. Past that, I mean, you got Sainz. Perez is in fifth place with 107. It's still in Verstappen's favor. I would still be pretty surprised if Verstappen didn't win the championship. But
it's going to be a lot harder fought.
It's going to be, I think this is going to be a good season.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot of the cars are really development-wise catching up to Red Bull.
Yeah.
Where they were last season. And the Red Bull is really starting to show weaknesses on like tighter tracks.
Yeah, bumpy tracks especially.
Yep.
It doesn't do well with bumps. So yeah, it's very, the field is very much closer than it was, and I anticipate us seeing several more races where we get non-Verstappen winners this year. Yeah. I would almost
Singapore
wager that
it comes to mind.
Which what?
Singapore definitely comes to mind, but even,
yeah,
I don't know, maybe even like Vegas where it gets pretty tight and it's pretty bumpy there.
Yeah. I kind of think that Red Bull still has the upper hand when it comes to straight line speed tracks. Their DRS system is just insane. So Canada, Monza, probably also Las Vegas. Las Vegas is weird though.
Yeah.
Spa, I think these tracks, Red Bull still has an edge just a little bit. But it's definitely not a guarantee. And yeah. I think that at least half the races remaining this season will not be won by Max Verstappen.
That's very exciting.
Which sounds like crazy just after what we've gone through the last couple of years, but that still means that Verstappen wins half the races, which if you think about it, is still pretty nuts.
That's still crazy, yeah.
But even still, if there's a non-Verstappen winner in half the races, I'm very excited for the rest of the season.
Yep.
Because that could be anybody. I mean, Lando could pick up another couple, Leclerc, Sainz. I honestly think Checo is not very likely to win a race. if the Red Bull is struggling, then Max is still going to be doing better than him.
Yeah. Are we entering a Verlec-Nor era, do you think?
Possible. But Piastri's always in there. He just got second. Mercedes has been doing better the last couple of weeks. So might even get a Russell Hamilton thing in there at some point. But
maybe. Although Hamilton seemed so checked out during this race.
Yeah, that's true. But there's a lot that could happen. I do like how
we're back to the Hamilton complaining about tires trend, though. I missed that.
Yes, we are back to that. All right, moving on. Esteban Ocon was... He was not the most popular guy at Alpine yesterday.
Watching him do a kickflip in lap one off of Gasly's car.
Yeah. ended up destroying his own race. Gasly ended up doing fine. I think CEO of Alpine said that the move was... What was the wording? I don't remember. But it was basically him saying, like, that was not okay. And there will be consequences, and we're going to decide what the consequences are. Well, this is still raw. So, I don't know what that means for Ocon.
Guillotine.
But the way it was worded made it sound like he might not be as secure in that team as previously thought. Which is interesting. Because I thought Alpine would do everything in their power to retain Ocon and Gasly this year.
Yeah, they seem... I mean, skill-wise, they seem so even, honestly.
They're very even, and they're both good. Like, they're both solid. They're, like, neither of them are going to be greatest of all time discussion, but, like, they're both very solid drivers.
I mean, they started out in arguably the worst car this season, and they still both have at least a points finish.
Yeah, that's the thing, is, like, when you're rebuilding a car... you need solid drivers, and to have two really solid drivers that are going to be not going to break the bank. I don't see Ocon and Gasly getting huge contracts.
They're solid fantasy team drivers.
Oh, absolutely. Great fantasy team drivers. Not expensive. They put in... As they basically put the car as high up as it can possibly go every week. Very much like Hülkenberg, another very solid driver that just does not... He's not going to be in the greatest of all time discussion for obvious reasons, but I think he's criminally underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're going to do with Ocon, but it doesn't sound like all is well there.
A little bit of a French Revolution at Alpine right now.
Yeah, possibly. I know Alpine is eyeballing Valtteri Bottas for next season. As is Williams. But Williams is also eyeballing Carlos Sainz. And now all the Sainz to Williams rumors are popping off, and I hate it.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I can't imagine Sainz going to Williams over Sauber.
Yeah. It sounded, wasn't he saying like he didn't get offered enough money, or wasn't there a rumor that he didn't get offered enough money by some of the other teams for him to go there?
To Sauber?
No, not to Sauber, but I can't remember what it was. Maybe I'm just saying things. Maybe I dreamt it.
I don't know, Ben. But I'm sure Sainz is going to make the decision that's best for him. I just hope he doesn't wait too long.
Yeah, I would much rather see Bottas go to Williams.
Yeah, I would love to see Bottas in Williams alongside Albon. And then Haas. Well, I guess we have Sargeant's seat on here. But, I mean, what do we really have to talk about? Like, Sargeant will not be on the grid next year. It's... Bless you.
I definitely thought I muted my mic for that. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I can edit it out. but yeah, Sargeant's not going to be on the grid next year. It's pretty much a foregone conclusion. so he could be out of a seat as early as summer break from some of the rumors we're hearing. Having Kimi Antonelli replace him just to be ushered into Mercedes in 25. I don't know how realistic all of that is, but I don't know.
I cannot wait for the silly season to start.
Yeah. Well, it's been weird.
Really start in earnest.
Yeah.
It's been like a slow trickle of like lower tier, well, not lower tier, but less high profile changes this year so far after the big stuff that we heard with Hamilton.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited for that to start get going again.
Yeah, that'll be good. But yeah, Sargeant's going to be gone. Hopefully Bottas and Albon. And then I'd love to see Ollie Bearman. And then I think Zhou is the other guy that Haas is looking at. Or Tsunoda. I think Tsunoda's also on their list. If Haas can poach Tsunoda,
that would be big.
And then get Bearman, that would be a very, very interesting team to watch. Tsunoda, Bearman, and then like AlphaTauri, or not AlphaTauri, V-Carb now, sorry, becomes, who would it be? It would definitely be Lawson, and then who's the other one? I mean, they don't, do they keep Ricardo if Tsunoda leaves? Maybe. I don't think so. They've got other talent they can pull from. They've got Isaac Hadjar just chomping at the bit in Formula 2. They've got plenty of F2 drivers to choose from. I don't know. This is all speculation.
I think if an F2 driver is going to go, they would be going to V-Carb for sure.
Yeah. But then I think Bearman will end up in Haas because he's in the Ferrari path. So.
Yeah.
All right. That kind of wraps it up. Championship standings we talked about a little bit. Nothing much to talk about in constructors other than Williams now being in 8th place. In the championship, ahead of Alpine and Sauber. Sauber still yet to score points at the moment. I am still drinking a shot of hot sauce.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. But in the pit stop championship, that is no longer the case. Because we had a very interesting pit stop championship this week. Because there were only there were 7 pit stops, 2 were by the same person, so that doesn't count. So we only have 6 listings, so everybody that made a pit stop this week got points.
Incredible. What a great technicality.
What a fantastic race this was, with plenty of interesting strategies.
Yeah, how do you feel about being able to change tires on red flags?
This is why I want to get rid of it. This exact reason is why I want to get rid of it. This was the most boring Monaco Grand Prix to my memory, and aside from lap 1, obviously, but there was no strategy whatsoever. Like, not even a little, nobody tried anything.
Well, the strategy was try to drive slower than the person in front of you, or the person behind you, and just try to make it work. It's very boring.
I mean, the front pack of 4 was trying to pull away from Russell in 5th, and there was a very brief window where you thought maybe McLaren would pit Norris to try and get past on fresh tires, because he would have had a free pit stop. It was never really realistic, and so it was just kind of always teased that maybe there will be a pit stop, but then there never was, so. Yeah, not a super exciting week for strategy. I saw many memes this week that was like, well, it was a picture, I don't even remember, but basic template was that Ferrari can't mess up pit strategy if there's no pit stops.
Hey, Ferrari's actually been good at pit strategy the past races.
They have, yes. They're still carrying that burden of their reputation, though.
Yeah, it's going to take a couple years for that.
Yeah. Anyway, Pit Stop Championship. Let's go through the top 6. It was Verstappen, Stroll, Zhou, Hamilton, Bottas, and Sargeant. So Zhou and Bottas both picking up big points this week. for Sauber, their first points of the year, and it jumps them up to, like, it looks like eighth in the championship. Yeah, Verstappen had a 2.1 second pit stop, and that was the fastest one. Past that, nothing's really changed other than Sauber moving up. All right, overtake of the week. I gave this to Ollie Bearman for his overtake on Kimi Antonelli during the Formula 2 feature race. And I showed Ben this overtake because he didn't see
so
it.
So good.
I showed it to him before we started recording, and yeah,
better
it
than
is.
The entire Monaco race.
It is so good. He basically does, going into, there's a right-hand turn right before the really sharp hairpin in Monaco. Going into that, he pulled a switchback on Antonelli, got on the outside and going into the hairpin, and then switched back again in the hairpin after Antonelli went a little wide and got through down the inside. Oh, it was so good. I think overtake of the season so far. Just the skill that took was immense.
Especially on a place where there are no overtakes. That was such a great that would have been a great overtake on any track, much less one where it's really not supposed to happen.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's go into our predictions and wrap this episode up, Ben. Indy 500, we talked about pole position last week. Didn't make any predictions for that. All right, podium was Newgarden Award and Dixon. What was your podium, Ben?
Newgarden, Dixon, and Ferrucci. So Ferrucci is the only one that I missed out on, but I actually feel pretty good about that.
And Ferrucci did have a good race. I think he finished in the top 10. So
he had a good race last year, too. So I'll just keep on hitting that Ferrucci button until it stops working.
There you go. I had Newgarden, Sato, and Larson. So I got Newgarden right.
Hey, Sato did pretty decent, too.
Yeah. Larson was doing decent until he broke the rules.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, it just happens.
You'll get that on those big races.
Yeah. All right, winning number of pit stops was 5. What did you say, Ben?
I said 5.
You actually got it right. I said 7.
I actually got it.
Yeah.
And that was after a lot of deliberation.
Yeah, you almost said 10. Let's just remember that.
You had to walk me down a little bit.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right. So that runs off our IndyCar 8500 predictions. Let's move on to Monaco Grand Prix. It was Leclerc, Piastri, Sainz, Norris, and Russell. Give me your top 5, Ben.
I had Verstappen, Leclerc, Norris, Piastri, and Sainz with Hülkenberg as my dark horse.
Yeah, so you had... Yeah.
I had nothing. I got 0.
It's brutal. I had Leclerc, Norris, Piastri, Verstappen, and Perez with Alonso as my dark horse. So I got Leclerc winning the race. I will take that. Everything else was wrong.
Yep.
All right. Fastest lap went to Lewis Hamilton. What'd you say?
I had Perez.
I had Leclerc. And driver of the day went to Leclerc. What'd you say?
I put Piastri, which I think he was in second place for that. But
yeah, but Leclerc won it. So I got that right. And very he won it by a long way. Yeah. All right. That runs off last week. Let's move on to this upcoming 2-week stint where we have 2 IndyCar races and 1 Formula One race to talk about in the next episode.
Very exciting.
All right. Give me your winning number of pit stops down there before we get there, Ben. All right, pole position. I'll go first. I'm giving this one to Willpower for the streets of Detroit.
Ooh, I'm going with Kirkwood for this one.
Good, solid choice there. Podium, I'm going Power, Pelot, and O'Ward. What do you got?
I've got Dixon, Pelot, and McLaughlin. Pelot won this last year, so I think Pelot's a pretty good choice for this year, too. He's still on a little bit of a hot streak carrying over, but we shall see.
For sure. All right, winning number of pit stops. I have 2. What do you got, Ben?
I've got 3. Just put that in there.
Okay. And
plus 1, as is the rule.
Yeah. Moving on to Road America, pole position. How about you go first, Ben?
I put Pelot for this.
I have Herta.
Ooh.
And podium.
Wow, bold. I've got Polo, Power, and Dixon.
I have Award, Herta, and Lundgaard.
Wow, zero Penske boys.
Yeah, zero Penske boys. Winning number of pit stops, what do you got?
I've got four.
I have three.
Nathan plus one.
as is the law. All right, Canadian Grand Prix, Formula One for next week. Give me your top five, Ben.
I've got Verstappen, Leclerc, Perez, Norris, and Piastri with Albon as my dark horse.
Okay. I have Verstappen, Norris, Leclerc, Sainz, Russell in my top five. And then I have Oliver Bearman as my dark horse. I don't know if he'll finish top five. But with two drivers possibly getting booted after this race, I could easily see Bearman being involved in this race. So I think that's kind of just why I put that up there. I think Bearman will be in this race. Yeah.
Wow. That's the darkest dark horse I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's pretty dark.
He doesn't even have a seat.
He's not even going to have a seat, and he might be. Yeah. all right. Fastest lap. What do you got, Ben?
I gave this one to Sainz.
I have Verstappen. Driver of the day. What do you got?
Verstappen.
I've got Norris. Norris wins as many Driver of the Days as Verstappen does Grand Prix.
That's just his thing, yeah. I've only got points for it.
Yeah. All right. Ben, do you have any words of wisdom for us this week?
Oh, man. Not so much words of wisdom, but kind of, well, man, it's too early for this. Words of wisdom. Having a solid, like, set wake-up schedule, I guess, would probably be my words of wisdom for this week. You know, you have, like, a three-day weekend, and, you know, you spend all week waking up at, like, 6 or 7 a.m. to go to work, and you're just like, man, I'm just going to sleep until 10. I deserve it. Don't do that. Don't do it. Don't let yourself do that. Wake up within an hour of when you usually wake up. Just go to bed a little earlier if you have to, but, you know, don't. It'll mess with you so much more if you sleep in too long. You'll be just way more tired throughout the day. So try to keep your weekend wake-up times within an hour.
Good stuff, Ben. I need to take that advice myself.
It was something I learned the hard way once I started working an actual 9-to-5 instead of swing shift.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's switching shifts definitely messes with you a little bit. I know.
Yeah.
I went from being a pizza guy working 5 p.m. to 2 a.m. to being a supervisor at a warehouse working 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. And that was an adjustment.
Dude, 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. is absolute, like, that's a great shift.
It's a very good shift because you have the rest of your day once you get off work.
Yeah, you can actually go to a doctor. Doctors are open when you get off work.
Yeah, it's a solid shift. Yeah. I am very happy with what I've got shift-wise. But anyway, that's a whole nother podcast.
This is not a swing shift podcast.
Not a swing shift podcast. All right. Thank you, everybody, so much for watching and listening to this episode of Rev Hang. If you enjoyed the episode, leave a like or rating on the platform you listened on. It'll really help us out. Get our name out there. Subscribe or follow if you'd like to see more. If you want to see updated standings for IndyCar and F1 or a calendar of upcoming racing from those series, which we've got a lot in the month of June, check out our website, revhang.com. If you have a question about racing or about us, hit us up on any socials in comments or DMs. That would be the best way to get a hold of us, and we may feature your question on the next show. You can follow Ben on Instagram at BenjiMeetsWorld and myself at 2N_squared. You can follow the Rev Hang page on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and even TikTok at Rev Hang Media. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about the IndyCar Grand Prix of Detroit and the Grand Prix of Road America. And also the Formula One Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal, one of my favorite cities in the world. But until then, what's that, Ben?
Have you actually been to Montreal?
I have, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Anyways.
until then, I've been Nathan.
And I'm Ben.
Thanks for hanging out.
See you later.